Hello and welcome back to Naturally Adventurous with Charlie and Ken, again joined by Julian Hoff. Today's the second in a two-part episode with Julian's further adventures in Senegal. Enjoy.
Our guide too was a young guy from the Gambia.
He knew it well.
Yeah, he knew the place.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was really good. Like, as he's saying, Yosh, he had eyes like a shithouse rat. He was just really, really sharp on picking stuff out. There was one day that we kind of thought he could have been a bit more communicative about some of the areas we're visiting and what we were looking for. Sometimes we were kind of guessing, like, well, what are we looking for here? Because he wasn't that communicative. But after a couple of days, you know, we got him on board. And there was one day we met the owner of the company on the road. He was leading another group going the other way, and he'd stopped to meet us, and we said hello. And then after we all piled in our van, we ended up driving off the side of this road somewhere, and we all kept looking at each other going like, well, where are we going? You know, we had an idea of what birds and what sites we should be going to. And we were just kind of driving out into the middle of this scrub on this little farm field, and this track just getting smaller and smaller. And we're all like, what on earth are we doing? And then all of a sudden, he just pulled up in the middle of nowhere, opened the door, and he just pointed at a tree. And he says, there's a bronze-winged courser sitting under that tree. It's just like, I couldn't even see it. This bird was sat down, and how he spotted it sitting down under this tree in the middle of nowhere or knew where to stop, it was just amazing. Now, we found out the owner of the company we just met had given him the tip of where to find it. But still, how he found it sitting down there, perfectly camouflaged, even knowing the rough area, I was like, wow, that's amazing. You know, I mean, all three of us on this trip are no slouches, really, when it comes to birding. But I was like, he picked up some birds before any of us did. It was like, maybe it's just young eyes. Maybe I'm just getting old. But he was really good. Yeah, really knew his stuff and got us on most of the good birds.
So it's interesting you mentioned he was from Gambia. I think Gambia has a long history of birding. And it's mostly Brit birders, right? They historically, they've been able to get there quite cheaply. And I think it's Anglophone as well. So maybe, I wonder if you could comment on that in terms of Gambia versus Senegal, the birding culture. And was it just coincidence that he was from there? Or did he come there because you basically have a lot more chances to learn as a guide in Gambia?
My impression growing up in the UK before I moved to the States is the Gambia has always been a prime destination for British birders. I think most British birders' experience of Africa has been the Gambia. I think the main reason for that is it was easy to get to from Britain, and there was a lot of nice hotels to stay at. The weather is great. And the birding's fantastic. And with the draw of seeing Egyptian plover, I think the Gambia was a huge draw for Europeans and British people. I think Senegal at the time was not as explored as it has been. And I think for the most part, as far as I can tell, Senegal, you know, people have been doing tours to Ghana, as you say. And Dave, who was on our trip, had been to Ghana. But Senegal, as far as I knew, not many people had been that I knew. So I think that the well-worn path and getting a guide in Gambia who knew all the Gambian sites, it was just easier to do that. I think now getting Egyptian plover in Senegal is easier. I think a lot of people used to see it on the Gambia River on a Gambia trip, but I think it was really difficult to do. I think it was a couple of days into eastern Gambia just to see Egyptian plover. As I think about it now, I remember back in the day, a couple of my friends, and this is probably online, it's probably an event that happened that's probably recorded somewhere online, but in order to get Egyptian plover, I think you had to take this boat down the Gambia River And my friends that had been on this trip, the boat had capsized. And a couple of people had died on this boat. And luckily, my friend and the rest of the group were able to like cling to this upside down boat in the Gambia River. And they had to get rescued, but it was like a horrible thing. Yeah, that's one of the things I remember about the Gambia as not being great. But, you know, I think that the birding in the Gambia now has become so good. And there's a lot of local tour guide companies in the Gambia that do Senegal and Gambia. Because obviously for them it's easier to cross the border. And some of the sites in southern Senegal are only a couple of hour drive from Banjul, which is, you know, the main port of entry of the Gambia.
So how does it work when you're driving? Because it sort of bisects a lot of Senegal, sort of north and south. So, and there's a road that crosses, but how do you sort of cross over without, you don't have to go through immigration or anything like that?
No. So my friends that did the Gambia that also went to Ouassadou in Senegal that we went to, I asked them and they said, crossing the border from Gambia to Senegal on the northern side is pretty easy. You know, it takes about an hour. Obviously, as you've hinted at in previous podcasts, some of the bureaucracy in Africa of getting across a border that you think should take 10 minutes takes like an hour or a couple of days. I think it's pretty easy to do the crossing now from Gambia to Senegal.
But if you're crossing from northern Senegal through Gambia into southern Senegal, is there like a sort of quick way to just go through without stopping or what?
So as far as I can tell, if you're looking on a map, you know, it looks like the profile of somebody's head with the nose being Dakar and the mouth and throat being Gambia. So the northern border of Gambia is kind of the southern end of Senegal. If you go south of the Gambia into the area of Senegal that wraps around the southern part of Gambia, it's not as easy to bird. I think it's a little bit less safe. So most people just do the southeast part of Senegal, which is just to the east. So they don't actually have to cross into Gambia. It's mostly the people that are birding Gambia that have to cross into the eastern part of Gambia into southeast Senegal on the northern edge there. So
you skip the esophagus and you go round the trachea at the
Yeah, you just tickle the epiglottis.
Just tickle the epiglottis.
So yeah, it was good. Like I said, the infrastructure there is pretty good. There was a couple of long drives getting to and from some of the sites, and one of the things that I think was difficult for us is that most of the places will serve you breakfast at 7. So trying to get an earlier breakfast to get out on the road and bird before it gets hot was really tough. There was a couple of places where we didn't start birding till it was like 8:30 or 9 o'clock and it was already starting to get hot. So it would have been great to have been out at 6 and, you know, birding in the cool part of the day. But a couple of times we asked the guide to say, hey, could you try and get us a packed breakfast? And he was just like, yeah, it's not going to happen. The people at these restaurants and hotels generally were like, no, you'll get breakfast at 7. So that was it. And breakfast was instant coffee and a lot of pain avec fromage. Oh, pan avec Nutella and a lot of jam, and that was it. Occasionally we got an omelette, which was nice, but it was a pretty simple breakfast. But the heat generally just keeps your appetite down. I didn't find myself hungry a lot, you know, a few beers in the evening, and it was good.
You mentioned that there is some insecurity, at least talked about, in southern Senegal. What's the nature of that? Is it just banditry or what kind of thing?
honestly, I'm not sure. I haven't done a lot of research on that. I think due to a lot of the differences in culture there, and there's been a lot of political, there was a little bit of political unrest before we went due to the president trying to get voted in Dakar. I think there was some protest there. So all I can think is that it's just unstable in that part of the country for various reasons, and not entirely sure why. So that I can't really talk much more to it than that. But we were just told that there were some parts that, yeah, you don't really want to spend time birding in on your own.
I'm just looking it up on the U.S. State Department website, which these always seem to be extremely on the overcautious end of the spectrum. Cautious. But yeah, they say, I guess that's called the Casamance region, and they mention crime. Yeah. Okay, Casamance. They mention crime and landmines. So maybe that is left over from some kind of civil war or internal conflict.
Yeah, landmines aren't exactly what you want on a birding trip to be concerned about.
Yeah, I've been there before, but yeah, generally good to avoid. I mean, been to places where I've thought about landmines a good bit.
No, so I think some of the other good birds that people would be interested in seeing in Senegal is, it's strange that there's a place called Toubacouta, which is on the Saloum Delta, just east of Dakar. And that's the main site that people stay at to see white-crested tiger heron. It's a mangrove-dwelling species. And you go out on a boat, and you go out at low tide, and it can take you a couple of days to see this. A couple of boat trips were scheduled for us to try and see this, because they all know this is a high target species. And for us, based on the fact that we didn't have a ton of time, we decided to kind of cancel one of the days there and only do one day looking for the heron, realizing that it might be more enjoyable to spend it in the north, in the wetlands, where there was going to be a lot more birds to look at. You know, spending a day birding with a lot more birds as opposed to just hunting for one species seemed more enjoyable for us. So we went out on the boat, and we were like, yeah, we're either going to see this bird or not. And we'd only been out 40 minutes, and we found one. The guide spotted it first, obviously, sitting in this mangrove tree. We all got brief looks at it. It disappeared. But it's curious to see a tiger heron in the old world when all the species of tiger heron I've seen have been in Central and South America. So it's kind of weird. I wonder if that's just a species that just got left over.
It's very strange. Cool thing. That the fact that there's a tiger heron in Africa. I guess it's in a different genus.
Have you seen it, Ken?
No.
It occurs in Ghana, and we've both been there a number of times, but it's not common. It's certainly not found in mangroves. It's found in sort of forested streams, you know, in the rainforest.
Yeah, I'm very keen to see that bird, but one of these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think with a bit of time put in there, it's gettable. It just depends how much time you have on the trip. And that area too is great. There was West African crested tern, which was a target for me. Used to be considered a race of royal tern. Yep. Obviously, it's, you know, slightly different in bill size and color. And I think in 2020, they split that from royal tern, and now that's West African crested tern. So that's good. I think that's possibly occurred a couple of times in Britain now since the split. So people might be getting an armchair tick.
So you mentioned that you had this day of birding where it was just the spectacle of vast numbers of birds, more than you'd ever seen prior in your life in a single day, I guess. Be keen to hear more about that.
Yeah, so in the north part of Senegal, bordering Mauritania, it's about a four-hour drive northeast from Dakar, there's a site called Djoudj National Park, and it's just these amazing wetlands on the Mauritanian border there that just hold a huge amount of ducks and flamingos, white-faced whistling ducks, hundreds of thousands, like huge amounts of lesser flamingos. And the lake that we birded in the evening, there must have been I think there've been counts of up to like 5,000 Garganies. Just huge amounts of birds just covering this lake. I think in the evening too, we had a huge roost of sand martins, bank swallows come in, and I think we estimated probably a million.
Mm-hmm.
A million birds. Wow. in this area. It was just mind-blowing. That spot too is also great for a lot of storks and herons. We took a boat trip down the river there. There's lots of whiskered white-winged terns, gold-billed terns, huge amounts of ducks, again, like comb duck, swan goose.
I know sometimes seen is the marbled duck or marbled teal, but it's a little bit rarer. Did you get that one?
Yeah, so that was a lifer for Dave. So we spent a good time going through the flocks of Gargany there. And I think on the evening we were there, you have these kind of brisk northerly winds coming in the afternoon. And luckily for us, it pushed all these ducks against the shore close to where we were watching from. And I think with a bit of patience, Dave was able to pick out a couple of marbled ducks. So we probably had two birds there. There was probably more, but again, as you said, Charlie, they're not that common. I don't like ducks or geese. It's well known. So
really? Oh, focus your efforts.
I love them.
I hate ducks.
Focus
or
on
geese.
The philoscopus.
Oh yeah, no. Everybody, the guys will be laughing. Listen to this. No, I do not like ducks or geese. No, I don't. They do nothing for me. One thing that we did see there that evening that ran across in front of the blind was African golden wolf.
Wow.
Which was something I really wanted to see, but unfortunately, the reality is it just looks like a mangy dog. The first one we saw looked like I was expecting something a little bit more exquisite. We saw three or four, but the first one was like a bit worse for wear. But
right.
The next two, they're very much coyote looking.
Yeah.
But that was a cool animal to see.
Yeah, I was curious to ask you about the mammal viewing. I know in most of West Africa, mammals are pretty thin on the ground because they're so heavily hunted. How's Senegal for big mammals?
A couple of the places, there was some monkeys, patas monkeys and red colobus monkeys. But generally speaking, large mammals are few and far between. One cool animal we did have driving into Wassadou the first night, off to us, there was like you driving down this like sandy track, and we'd been driving down this sandy track towards the camp, and we'd only been in there like half a mile, and off to the side, our guide spotted an African wildcat sitting there, which is the black, wow, black-footed version. Which is way different than the one that I'd seen recently in Kruger. This one looked very much the same, except the backs were spotted like an ocelot or a serval, which was kind of cool. So that was a really good animal to get. But generally speaking, you know, a couple of hippos we had at Wassadou, which was quite funny. The river there is not that wide, and I remember taking a couple of boat trips at Wassadou. That's the place where you get Egyptian plover. We went out in this boat, and at one point, I think there was six of us in this boat, and it was so tiny. It was like a bathtub with a propeller. It was just like, you know, they're giving us life jackets, and I'm like, I don't think that's going to help if we go in. And these hippos, you know, I remember being on Lake Mburu, and we had a hippo hit the boat a couple of times, and that was a much bigger boat, but I can only imagine having seen these hippos where we were actually, you know, taking this boat trip the day before. I was just like, this could go pear-shaped very quickly.
I always feel a little bit of a sense of loss in West Africa. I mean, I haven't spent that much time there, but when you're in those savanna environments, part of you is expecting that there'll be mammals in the same density as in East Africa or Southern Africa, and they just aren't there anymore. I'm sure they used to be. I mean, up when you get up into the Sahel, there were some of the world's greatest herds of mammals there historically, you know, oryx and various gazelles and stuff. And, you know, 99.9% of those animals are just gone.
There wasn't a dearth of big animals like that, you know. Lots of goats and chickens. That's basically
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But no, I think the only a couple of other birds that are probably interesting to talk about, because I know it's getting on a bit now.
You still haven't mentioned one that I would have thought would be one of the birds of the trip.
Yeah, well, I'm getting to that.
The golden nightjar.
Yeah.
You're getting to it.
Yeah.
Leaving the best to last. Anything with golden in the name sounds pretty cool.
It's, yeah. That was a huge target for everybody. For me, I was aware of golden nightjar because in 2015, one had been hit by a birder's car in the Western Saharan region. That's kind of where I first became aware of that species. Now, it occurs in northern Senegal pretty regularly, so a lot of people that have been going to Senegal recently have been targeting that bird, and the guides know a spot in the north around a town called Pau d'Or, which is right on the Mauritanian border there. And it's a bird of these dry acacia scrubby areas, but one of the problems recently, apparently, is that they're becoming harder in certain areas because of agricultural changeover of the land. A lot of the land is being decimated for agriculture. So a lot of this habitat is getting, you know, smaller and smaller. But this general area where people see them, we spent the first night there and wandered around and didn't see anything. So we hung out till dark and we heard a bird calling quite a way to the east of where we'd been looking. So obviously we'd been looking in the day in the wrong place. And we spent quite a bit of time trying to get this bird to come in. We had brief views in the spotlight. I mean, they were tickable, but I think for everybody on the trip, we really wanted to find a bird during the day and get really good photographs. So we decided to go back in the morning, and we had an idea now based on where the birds started calling from, where to look. And we'd had a couple of GPS pins from other people that had seen them in January. So we had kind of an area to look at, but it was such a vast area. So we went back about first thing in the morning, and we just decided to do a huge attack on this area. And after about an hour, I don't know how, but we managed to flush one and we kept sight of it and we found where it landed, and we were able to kind of, again, through just a bit of a cautious approach, get some really good looks and photographs of this bird. And I think for everybody, it was a real big highlight of the trip, seeing it the way we eventually saw it. I mean, we had to put the effort in, but what an amazing looking bird. We really crushed it photographically. But definitely one of the target and highlights of the trip.
But I mean, nightjars, actually all nocturnal, both mammals and birds, have a certain mystique. So nightjars have a certain mystique. And among nightjars, I mean, it's a big family. Golden nightjar must be one of the best looking sort of five members of that family. It's just a beautiful bird. If people should look a photo up of this creature.
As you've said, when you're on a trip, any night bird, owl or nightjar, it's highly prized.
For sure. Most often
because, you know, you have to go out at the end of the day when, you know, you've already been burning the candle at both ends. And it's just hit and miss. You know, if you even hear one, it's quite good. But then to actually get it to come in and see it well is a whole different scenario. We did get a couple of good owls on this trip. One, which I didn't need, which was African scops. We saw that at Wasadu. That was a tick for a couple of the guys. Saw that well, but it took us two nights to get in. We didn't see white-faced owl, despite having several sights for it. We didn't even hear one. So that was kind of upsetting.
It's a tricky one.
Yeah, apparently the day after we left Wasadu, a couple of birders on eBird had reported having one right in the camp where we were staying. So I was just like, oh, yeah, you just don't know. But the best owl on this trip for me was one that I hadn't got a chance to see in Kruger because I never went to the north part of Kruger. And it's a bird that I've wanted to see for a while and it is on offer at Wasadu, But again, it's one of those birds that is seen maybe two or three times a month on the river, and that was Pell's Fishing Owl. I don't know, have you guys seen that? You probably must have.
Yeah, many times. Oh, yeah. But it's a special
many
bird.
Times.
Yeah, so my good friends from England that had been there 3 weeks previous, I'd asked them what the chances were of seeing it, and they said, we didn't hear one. We tried a couple of times on the boat trip, and we didn't see anything. It had been seen maybe the week before by one lucky group on a boat trip. So, you know, I wasn't expecting to see it. And we went out on this boat trip one morning, and the boat trips at Wasserdu are great. They're just so peaceful. You get really good photo ops of a lot of kingfishers, you know, blue-breasted kingfisher, killer looks at Egyptian plover, carmine bee-eaters. It's just really birdy. We did get white-backed night heron there, which is a good bird.
Mm, nice.
Which I realized I'd seen in Uganda, so I had to take that off my list. But we had been driving down the first day and didn't see anything. And on the second boat trip, we were just talking about Pell's Fishing Owl, and the boatman just pointed in the trees, like, yeah. And we were like, oh, he's just pointing out where the bird has been seen historically. And then he starts backing up, and he's like, no, Pell's Fishing Owl. And it's like, it dawned on everyone that, oh, my God, he's got one sitting in a tree. So really? We backed the boat up, and there was this, like, big ginger cat sitting in a tree. And we got really killer looks at it. And it was one of those incredulous moments where you're not really expecting to see this species. And all of a sudden, it's there showing really well. And we all got on it, got a couple of pictures on of it. And then it just flew out. And it was just one of those completely lucky moments that you have on a birding trip. But that was one of the highlights for me. That's a bird I definitely wanted to see. So, yeah, it's owls are tough.
We see that regularly in Botswana on the Okavango, but, you know, because it's a regularly seen bird, everybody's kind of expecting it, you know, and then some years it is a little bit more difficult than other years, but, still yet to miss it.
Yeah, I think for us, they said that in Wasserdu, in the rainy season, the river can rise up as high as 18 feet above where we had it. So the lower the river, the better it is. And I think Pell's, especially in Wasserdu, become a little bit easier in the drier season when the rivers are lower and it's easier to kind of hunt. But yeah, we did well. And the only other bird I want to mention, because I know time's getting on, there's a roost of scissor-tailed kites and lesser kestrels that figures prominently in all the bird tour reports. And this is a spectacle that is, again, one of the highlights of going to Senegal, just north of the Gambian border at a place called Kousmar Island, near a town of Kaolack. You take a little boat across to this island, and it's a communal roost. There's some baobab trees there and acacia trees, and this island, for some reason, is a huge roost of scissor-tailed kites. And I think from November to the end of March, it's hard to survey, but numbers are reported as like 10,000 birds.
Wow.
We were there in late February and we saw at least 500, but the spread out over such a vast area that getting an accurate count, you really need several people stationed at several places to get an accurate count. But these birds come in by the hundreds at dusk, and they're such a cool looking bird. I think they used to be known as African swallowtail kite, but they're much smaller than American swallowtail kite. They're kind of a Mississippi kite size bird, but really
or even
sweet
smaller
to look at.
Yeah. Mini raptor.
Yeah, so that was amazing to watch these, and the photo ops are really, really good. And for me, it was great to see lesser kestrels again. You know, from somebody growing up in Britain, where lesser kestrel was, you know, a good vagrant to Britain. You know, I was always interested in their ID. So it was really good on this trip to kind of look at a few lesser kestrels as well. But that's definitely a highlight for people listening. If they're interested in going to Senegal, it would be remiss of me not to mention that.
Have you seen that bird, Ken?
Yeah, I think I've seen maybe 20 of those in my whole life. So the idea of seeing 10,000.
I've never seen
really.
One. I've still, yeah. No, still yet to see one. It's one I always look at in the books because, you know, it gets a bit into East Africa and the far north of Ghana or whatever. But yeah, I'm still yet to see one of those. Looks pretty cool.
Let's go to Senegal, Charlie.
Yep, I think we need to.
It's a great trip.
Halfway between where you are and I am at the moment. So just meet in Senegal
for
a few days.
Yeah, easy to get to. I was surprised the amount of species on offer that you think of as truly African, yet are still only less than an 8-hour flight from JFK. It's a trip you can do multiple times without too much hassle at a reasonable cost. Because you don't realize how far West Africa sticks out into the Atlantic there, you know?
Yeah, huge difference compared with East Africa, Southern Africa. Those are going to involve multiple long flights, and even the routing is often not very good. There's a few direct flights. You can go JFK to Nairobi, but it's a much longer flight.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I was able to grip you guys off a little bit there. Not often I get to do that, but thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for coming back, and I know you're quite busy these days, so thanks for fitting it in.
Well, thanks, Julian. It's been great to catch up with you again and, of course, get gripped off in a major way.
What I'm here for.
Yeah. There's some very cool, but I tell you what, it was a place I'd always kind of thought about going, but it wasn't really very high up on my list of places to go, but it certainly has jumped up a few places. Looking at some of your photos and hearing your descriptions of some of those places. But yeah, Golden Nightjar, Quail Plover, Sistel Kite, they're all real mega birds that I would really love to see. So yeah, thanks for joining us. I think we're going to play out with the Golden Nightjar, which looking at that picture, I think is the best nightjar. That color and the patterning and the whole story that goes along with it, I think really is pretty magical. So we're going to play out with Golden Nightjar. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks again, Julian. Cheers, Ken. We'll catch you all next time again on Naturally Adventurous.